This is Will Friedle from Pod Meets World. Let's be honest. The 90s gave us some great things. The music, totally rad. The fashion, so fly. Home decor, that's a different story. In HGTV's new competitive series, Totally 90s House, two teams of iconic TV stars take on two homes frozen in time. Paired with HGTV experts, they'll turn dated spaces into fresh modern homes and compete for the ultimate bragging rights. Goodbye, honey oak cabinets. Hello, 21st century. Totally 90s House. Special series premiere starts August 26th at 9, 8 central on HGTV.
Hi guys, Anna here. Just before we start this show, I wanted to remind you that we're about to perform our very first ever live episode of Drop Us a Line. That, of course, is the super secret show that we mention a lot publicly. That is part of our Club Fish offering. If you want to check out some of the previous Drop Us a Line episodes, please go to patreon.com/clubfish. Join up and you can hear all previous Drop Us a Lines. And we're so excited that we're going to be doing a live one on the 12th of September, King's Place in London, as part of the London Podcast Festival. It'll be at 4:30 in the afternoon. Please come us along and please send in your emails with whatever mad, weird questions, insults, comments, compliments. We accept all sorts. Send them into podcast@qi.com. And if you buy tickets to that show, please mention in your email that you've got tickets and we'll be able to pluck you out of the audience and force you to read aloud your email. Do buy tickets at nosuchthingasafish.com/live if you fancy joining in the absolute chaos of our first attempt to record that. We can't wait. It's going to be really fun. We always love doing it in the office, if only to see Andy make a complete tit of himself hosting it. And looking forward to doing that in the flesh. Okay, that's all for now. On with the show. Hello, welcome to another episode of Little Fish, LF, the weekly podcast where we, the No Such Thing as a Fish team, go through the inbox. Specifically, Andy goes through the inbox and he takes all of the greatest facts that you've sent us this week and we read them out back to you. And they're fantastic. Always, without fail. My name is Anna Tuschinski. I'm here with James Harkin and Andrew Hunter Murray. Who's going to start?
I'll start. In 2020, all three of Scottish football team Ross County's goalkeepers were named Ross. Ross Doohan, Ross Laidlaw and Ross Munro. They also had a midfielder called Ross Draper and a striker named Ross Stewart.
So confusing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Luckily, it's the surnames that go on the back of the shirts.
But yes, in the middle of a match, you'll panic and shout Ross, won't you? And then suddenly the goalkeeper's run over to you and says, what's going on?
Do you know what? In football, there's a rule where you're not allowed to shout my ball if you're going to go to head it. Oh, we were always taught this at school. I'm not sure whether they would punish you. But basically, if you shout that, no one knows who you're talking about. And so you might be putting the opposition off. And that's ungentlemanly conduct.
Right. What do you mean no one knows who you are at that
time?
Yeah,
you just say, my ball, and then the defenders go, oh, I'm going to leave it to my mate. Because you can imagine like a really good impressionist going, playing a football game and doing an impression of the opposition players.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they leave the ball and then you jump through and score. So you're not really supposed to say my ball, you're supposed to say your name. But I wonder if everyone's called Ross, whether you just wouldn't be able to say Ross's ball either.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I think that's a much better version of football where everyone on the pitch is an impressionist and it's trickster football.
And you're blindfolded, so you have to judge whether the impressionist is the guy or not the guy.
Are the impressionists also lookalikes?
That's it.
It's very hard to get the team together, but once you've done it, God, it's funny.
Anyway, thank you very much for that fact. Ross in Sydney.
Hey!
Good stuff.
Wonderful. Here's one from Freya Bento, who signs off, yes, like the pie.
Like the town in Uruguay.
Yeah. But that's named after the pies, or are the pies named after the town?
Pies named after the town.
Freya Bento.
What an amazing name. Unbelievable that your parents called you Freya in a cool way. Love it.
In a cool way.
Yeah, what cool parents. I wonder if they were huge Freya Bento fans.
In the 19th century, Glasgow's Britannia Panopticon, the UK's oldest wooden music hall, that's relevant, the wooden bit,
yeah,
went on fire, destroying the attic's wax museum and killing possibly all of the animals in the basement zoo. Oh. This is not the funny bit. The upper gallery was saved, however, due to the amount of people who pissed on the wood over the years whilst watching shows, making it so soggy it never caught fire.
No. Wow.
Yeah, so there you go. Good fact.
That's a good reason to urinate publicly. Yeah, you never know when there's going to be a fire this day and age, yeah, quite often.
Do you know that I think it's the Yazidi people are not allowed to urinate onto fire because fire is sacred and it's like a taboo.
I remember they had lots of strange taboos.
Yeah.
That's
one of them. So like for the Y series of QI, I was thinking like, Alan, who wouldn't piss on you if you were on fire? Would be quite a good question. Might not get through, but...
But there are so many answers to that question. Loads of people.
That's quite cool that there was a fire in a wax museum. So it's like an upside down candle. If you just flipped it the other way around, you've just got a giant candle. Didn't you say there was wax on the top floor? Yeah, did I make that up?
That was in the attic. Yeah, the wax museum was in the attic. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So normally the fire is on top of the candle.
I see.
There you go.
No, that's a really cool point.
Otherwise, they set fire to your table.
Yeah. Instead of pissing it out, a load of people whose birthday it was could come over and blow it out.
A lot of good ideas here. Yep. And here's another good fact. Wood-related, again. Ooh. Ali Mackey says one of the oldest recorded ice cream flavours is wood.
What?
Yeah, times were tough back in the day.
Wood.
And Ali specifies that China's Tang Dynasty, so the 7th to the 9th centuries,
okay,
had...
So before rum raisin.
Rum raisin was the second, actually.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Had a recorded recipe for a frozen dairy dessert that involved camphor wood.
Oh, yeah. That's
which actually does have a scented, doesn't it? So I'm not sure if they left the wood in once they've added the scent.
I don't think that would be very nice, camphor.
It's very perfumey, yeah, and I think of it sort of as the thing you'd use to scent a room or a car. You know?
Yeah, I think of it as being a scent for a room, which means it would taste okay, wouldn't it? I know you wouldn't eat a scented candle.
What are you talking about? My incense twiglets are delicious every night. Yum, yum, yum.
I wonder if when you got your ice cream, you'd stick a piece of camphor in like a 99 flake.
Oh, yeah. Ice lolly. You could have the ice lolly stick.
The stick is the lolly. The
lolly is the stick. Yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't know when to stop eating, would you? Okay, here's another one from Noah Gettle. And Noah says, sorry to keep bothering you with sponge facts. So I assume there's been a number of emails before this.
Noah is a frequent flyer in the fish inbox. And well, welcome back, Noah.
Finally, Noah, you're on the show. I don't know if Noah has been before.
Maybe once. Yeah.
But Noah mentioned that most sponges are viviparous, as in they give birth live, like mammals. Mm. But the way they fertilize their eggs is they eat sperm out of the water column and it gets shunted on a different track from the food. So, like, it goes down a different hole, basically.
How are you doing that?
Can it go down the wrong way? Sometimes, you know, your food goes down the wrong way.
I feel like it does happen, yeah.
Must like, do.
Sorry, some of the sperm went down the wrong way. And Noah, to get off that subject a little bit, says there are deep sea glass sponges that are apparently more than 11,000 years old.
Come off it.
Yes.
Older than farming.
Oh, about the same as farming.
Yeah.
Yeah, about the same as the oldest cultivation of lentils and the first pottery was invented around this time as well.
And are we thinking that they were responsible in some way?
That's the only logical conclusion, isn't it?
I think so.
Are we sure? There must be a bit of an uncertainty range on these things.
11,000 plus or minus 3,000 years.
Oh, okay. But even at the very youngest, that's 8,000 years. That's pretty good.
So Noah sent us the link and I read through it. And basically they took some spicules, part of a sponge, and they looked at the isotopes of oxygen and various different isotopes, and you can tell how old things are by using science that I don't really understand.
So cool.
Great.
I've got another underwater one now. This is from Stephen Elsheshen. Sorry, Stephen. Sorry, I properly screwed up your surname there, but it's a really cool name. It's all e. The only vowel in it is E, but there are three of them. Nice. That's not his fact, amazingly. Stephen's fact is that until 2012, half the functioning Canadian submarines were in a shopping mall in landlocked Edmonton, Alberta. This is so good. Basically, there was a place, the West Edmonton Mall. So this was a thing in the shopping mall called Deep Sea Adventure Lake. Mm. And they were real submarines that offered you a 20-minute submarine ride of the underwater artificial lake. You went down 5 meters. This is at the time
God,
when...
It must have been huge, this mall.
Yeah.
It is a big mall. They were small subs. Okay. The Canadian military at the time had 3 submarines and the West Edmonton shopping mall had 4 submarines.
Sorry, were they designed for the mall or were they designed for the military and then they realized...
No, they were designed for the... They were never military. They were the first ever recreational submarines. There was a disaster in 1985 when one of them sank, but it was fine because it was a submarine.
It's what they're meant to do, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, they can... Like, submarines can get stuck at the bottom, can't
That's
they?
That's
like
a very good
Kersh
point.
Did.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Although this was only 5 meters down, so it was less... I don't think anyone ever died in the West Edmonton Mall in a submarine.
It's got the bends.
Can I tell you about the coolest thing that I've ever been in a mall?
Yeah. Mm.
This is pretty cool, actually. So it was in China in the world's biggest mall, and I've forgotten what it's called. I think I mentioned it here before. It's like the Global Mall or something. Anyway, I was in like a giant robot that was probably, I would say, 3 times my height.
That's cool.
And I would sit on a chair in the robot and I could drive the robot around the mall.
No. So you're up at the top of it.
I was like in the middle, like in its tummy kind of thing.
Wow.
That's the closest any of us has been to living in the film Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
Where they're getting big robots.
It was
fight.
Exactly like
Did you
that.
Have to fight any kaiju?
No, I chased my daughter around who was in a little ice cream van.
Wow.
What, camphor? Or just trying to get a camphor flake. Yeah, yeah.
Wow. But yeah, isn't that cool? They had one of those.
Was it maneuverable? Like, was it quite
yeah.
good at moving around?
It was a little bit cumbersome, but I managed to get it around.
How fast could it go?
Oh, slow.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's sensible.
Yeah.
They think of everything these days.
I couldn't crush any skyscrapers with it.
Health and safety gone mad.
But like, wow. Yeah, it was like, because we walked past it and I just went to my wife, God, that's pretty cool, isn't it? She went, you should go on. I was like, oh no, this is probably for kids.
For little kids, yeah.
No, you should go before she could say it the second time. I was already there.
I've got a fact here from Mikael Anderson, whose fact is about Swedish footballer Gustav Lagerbilk. Gustav Lagerbilk is a baron and the top dude of the noble house of Lagerbilk. I don't know if top
good.
Dude is an official peerage term in Sweden. He says, I've not looked into it deeper, but it can't be too common to hold a baronial title and be a football defender at a World Cup.
Wow.
No, oh,
was
World
it the World Cup?
Yeah, yeah.
Apparently Gosh, so. Do we know if any of our defenders were in the House of Lords?
Are there any Earls or Viscounts? Or,
we will have had the odd MBE, like David Beckham.
But hereditary, come on.
But you're not allowed...
Not these new
You're not allowed to have a gong that you got through doing football. I do know what I mean.
All through doing charity work after football that's really about the football.
I believe not. I can't think of anyone of the landed gentry who's ever played even professional football. The first person I could think of was Jan Vanagor of Hesselink, which I think like the of part of his name meant that he was of some kind of gentry.
Oh, wow.
But he was, I think he was Dutch, maybe.
Nice.
That's cool. So I was wondering if in some places it's more common to be a member of the landed nobility, only because I found out recently, reading up on the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth, as you do, that there was a time in their history when 1 million people were nobles. Like nobles, not just gentry, nobility. It was because they had
a
mad system of distributing.
It's because they were trying
titles.
To avoid giving people a pay rise. They're going to say, look, we can't do it in the budget this year, but I'll tell you what we can do. We're going to put you in the nobility.
Hey, I've got the campaign brief ready, built from last quarter's data and the competitive landscape.
Approved. Oh, agents, where would we be without you?
Somewhere with a lot more tabs open.
Create your first Monday agent in minutes at monday.com.
I've got one more.
Yeah, go on.
This is from Elaine. Elaine says, you may already subscribe to Clive Tompkins Linkfest. Which I don't.
Oh,
I don't.
No.
It sounds great because it's. I think it's lots of interesting links. There is a site that has water recipes that match the waters in various different places and sources. So for example, if you want to make a coffee like you're in London, it provides you with a recipe of you need 55% Perrier, 37% Harrogate Spring, and 8% Aquapana. And that provides the right hardness, and the right calcium, the bicarbonate.
That's
you know,
pretty clever.
If you want to feed James's cat.
It's just 100% Evian.
100% Evian.
Yeah. But I'm interested because the water in London is rank, I think. Like, coming
very
from,
hard.
Yeah,
very
coming
hard.
From the north of England where we get all our water from the Lake District, it's like, you know, the water in London, I don't like it at all. So I'm surprised you can make such a horrible thing from three quite nice...
Okay, it's
I'm
going to
stand up for London water here.
Yeah?
It's hard.
I like it. I like London water.
It takes off the soap really fast. When you go up north and you're washing your hands and then you put them under, it takes about 30 seconds to get all the soap off. There's no time for that down south. It's busy. It's productive.
You can't get bubbles in your bubble bath.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
every 3 days, I have to take out an enormous block of calcium out of my kettle.
I like
at
that.
At no extra cost. At no extra cost.
You don't need to take it out. It adds to the flavour over time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it matures the tea.
You can sprinkle it on your food if you run out of salt. Just a bit of crunchy calcium. It's lovely.
Anyway, any more for any more?
Yes, I've got one from Lawrence Jan van Steenis. No idea whether that is a person from the gentry from whatever country Lawrence Jan is from. But Lawrence Jan says, I don't think this has been mentioned yet, and you're absolutely right, but Domenico Tedesco just replaced Vincenzo Italiano as head coach of Italian first division football team Bologna. Oh, maybe you did mention this, Andy. Or well, maybe we were just chatting about it.
I think about it a lot, but I don't. I've never talked about it.
No, really? No. The interesting thing about this, as if what I already said wasn't interesting enough, is that Tedesco means German in Italian and Italiano means Italian.
In Italian.
In well, yeah, in many different languages. Yeah. So, and more interestingly, is the fact that Domenico Tedesco was born in Italy and Vincenzo Italiano was born in Germany.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
So the Italian Mr. German has been replaced by the German Mr. Italian.
Yeah. So that is
amazing.
That is fun.
Amazing.
It's good fact. So we get a lot of facts about football and football names.
I certainly get a lot sent to me from Andy.
I think who's going to handle this well?
Yeah.
James and Anna. Yeah, I think we do get a lot because there's been a World Cup on.
Yeah.
I'd say the recent supply has dried up a little bit.
Okay.
In the inbox, but we're dealing with a bit of a time lag because we get the facts several weeks in advance just to have a bit of a buffer.
I see. Our fans are just kind of topical.
It can happen. Yeah.
I was kind of interested that the Italian word for German is Tedesco.
Tedesco.
Yeah.
Have you heard that before?
No, where's that coming from?
Well, what's the German for German? Deutschland, right? Yeah. And what's the French for German?
Alemannia.
Yeah. What's the Russian for German?
Don't know.
Niemiec. What's the English for German? German.
Yeah.
Isn't it weird that all of those different countries have different words for German?
Completely actually. Different.
Isn't that so
and
weird?
Where's this Tedesco? Yeah.
So Tedesco actually comes from a similar background as Deutschland. It's just those two words. One has morphed into the other.
Yeah.
But the reason is that Germany was such like a huge conglomeration of lots of different people that all these countries dealt with a different part of Germany
right.
at different parts of their time. And sometimes it was like the Germans or it might be the Alemans or it might be the... in Russian, they called them Nemets because it means someone who can't speak because they spoke a different language to them. Okay. In Finnish, it's Saksa, which comes from Saxon.
Right.
So basically, everyone dealt with Germans for the main part of their history at different times.
God,
and so they all had different names.
That is really interesting. Well,
lovely.
Can I just do one more? Because I thought this was just amazing. Yeah. And this is from someone called a Lambros. And it's that deer antlers have memory. And the explanation is that if a deer gets injured at a certain point in their antler one year, it will make a big gash or a cut or something. There'll be a small callus, which will then heal. And then those antlers will shed as they normally do every year. And when the antlers grow back the next year in the same spot,
yes,
there'll be a line, an ectopic line, which is a remnant of that injury.
What the hell?
What's going on there?
What's going on with deer?
Because that was just air until you regrew your antlers. the spot where that was just in midair, and how does it know that that spot of air should become an injury?
Well,
again?
I don't think that's the solution. Whatever the answer is, it's so clearly not that.
I don't think, like, when you get a 3D printer, it doesn't go air, something, something, air, 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 something, running low on air.
Oh, for God's sake. I've got to buy a new air canister for the 3D printer. This is so typical. So expensive.
I've misexplained that.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's amazing.
It is amazing. That is really incredible.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
To know. And there's a little bonus fact, actually, from Lambros, which is that in Greek, when a man is being cheated on by his partner, we say he has antlers. So, like, if we'd say you've been cuckolded.
Cuckolded, yeah.
Horns. Yeah, yeah.
Same in, like, quite a few countries. It's like the bull's horn thing.
Yeah. But why is that? Because aren't cuckold is about cuckoos, isn't it? And then is the...
It's about cookies.
Cuckoos.
Oh, cuckoos, sorry.
It might be about cookies, but it depends on the marriage, doesn't it? That was never a factor for us.
Mine actually would break down over that, I can imagine.
Well, it's the old Shane Warne like thing, isn't it? Why are you so fat, Shane? Because every time I have sex with your wife, she gives me a cookie.
There we go.
Yeah.
We should probably wrap up, shouldn't we, and move on to the next bit of this show.
Yes.
And so we are now about to bestow some of our former headline facts on lucky recipients. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. Here is one that goes out to Jane. Jane, congratulations. Your fact is now that, according to a recent theory, Stonehenge was built as part of a team-building exercise.
Wow. It was tougher then, wasn't it? Now you go and, what, do axe throwing or something, or a round of golf?
I drove past only the other day.
Did you?
Yeah.
Was there a big old traffic jam next to Stonehenge like there always is?
That's traditional. And it was very nice, but I think it's nice that because you then get to have a little gawp without feeling bad, despite the fact that
I deliberately don't look at it. Because I'm like, the reason this traffic jam is here is because people are looking at Stonehenge. There's no reason for there to be a traffic jam. It's because people are slowing down to look at Stonehenge. Yeah. So I'm not going to look at it.
Wait, what possible better reason could there be than looking at our greatest monument?
I'm just saying that there's no reason to have a traffic jam when all I want to do is get to Slough.
Yeah.
What you need to do, clearly, is make the road a 6-lane superhighway at that exact moment. Just for that 200 metres.
Yeah.
That goes over the top of Stonehenge?
It goes over the top of Stonehenge, yeah.
Fly, you just need one extra lane. You need the Henge lane, which is signposted for the next 3 miles, if you want the Henge lane.
For gawpers.
For gawpers,
yeah. That's lovely. That's quite a good idea. Yeah, well, I don't know why they haven't done that. Yeah. Right.
All right, shall I give a fact to somebody?
Sure.
How about this one? And this is for someone whose name apparently is the fervour of a new convert.
Hmm.
No further questions.
No further questions.
Hey. This is amazing because this person with the extraordinary name gets the best fact I've ever said, which is that while digging New York subway tunnel in 1916, worker Marshall Mabee got sucked through a pocket of air, blasted up through 12 feet of riverbed, through the river, and then thrown 20 feet into the air. Yes.
Now, I think this was a special request, which we don't do anymore. We did a few in the early days of dishing out facts, but it's basically too complicated now.
Because this wasn't a headline fact.
No,
this
wasn't
a headline fact. So this is actually a bit of a cheeky one.
When you say it was a special request, was it from the fervor?
I believe it was, yeah.
It's surname Convert. Well, Mrs. or Mr. Convert, there you go. Have that fact.
Yeah.
Although I will say that so Andy, when he's recording all the facts we've said on the show, he puts a little caveat sometimes after them. And this one comes with the caveat in brackets, much discussion, dubious? ?
Yeah.
He survived, two colleagues perished.
Yeah.
So it actually ends with a bit of a tragedy.
Yeah.
And I don't think it is dubious, all right?
It was in a newspaper at the time.
It was in a newspaper, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
Does it not ring a few bells that his surname is Maybe?
Oh my gosh, do you think they accidentally capitalised that? And actually the article was Marshall Maybe got
Very good. Okay, here is a fact now that is under the custodianship of Casey Crubb. Casey, your fact is that the Great Wall of China is held together by sticky rice.
Nice.
Very funny.
I've been up the Great Wall of China.
As have I.
Recently.
I haven't.
And the reason I say recently is because I think it's quite new, but I came down on like...
It's not quite new. It's famously very old. What magical big robot were you in this time, James? Do you know what? I'm starting to doubt all these stories.
So I came down on a toboggan.
Cool.
So I think that is relatively new. If you go to like one of the main bits of the Great Wall, you can go up on a cable car, so you don't have to walk all the way up there, and you can come down on a little toboggan ride.
Wait, sorry, when you say go up it, how, sorry to show my ignorance, but how tall was the wall?
It's on the top of a big old hill.
It goes, right. It famously follows the landscape no matter where it goes, so it goes up and down. Yeah, over yeah.
And it's in a hilly area because it's on a border, or it was on a border.
Got middle. It. It was, it's not like a 100-meter high wall that you have to climb up
no,
and then toboggan
it's
down.
Not that high.
So question, James.
Yeah.
There's the main bit of the wall and there are ramparts on either side. Yeah. So are you tobogganing along the wall in a downhill direction or are you tobogganing down the hill?
You're down the hill. So okay. You start at the wall and then for the entirety of the toboggan, you're going away from the wall.
I understand. That's very cool.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Really it is a really fun thing to do, I have to say. Yeah. And the queues for it are outrageous.
I bet.
Really?
Just like all queues in China, actually, for big fun things are very, very long. But the queues for the Great Wall of China, good grief.
Did you leave skid marks?
Andy!
What?
Children listen.
Sorry, that's a very childish question.
I went down with my daughter, my 4-year-old daughter. Oh, we were in the toboggan together.
That's wow, that's a dream.
Yeah, and she was just going faster, faster all the way down. But if you go too fast, they tell you off.
Here's another one. Jay Scoynes, your fact is that the world's largest single-celled organism can get up to 12 inches long.
Really good.
How cool is that?
When it's excited.
It's very
we probably
good.
Said.
It's, sure, we did. This is a single cell called Caulerpa taxifolia, and it gets up to a foot long. And it's just one cell.
Really amazing.
Just so cool.
Here's another one for Henry Taysom. I remember this fact, and this was actually a fact my friend told me, who is obsessed with snakes. And it's that if you're bitten by the boomslang snake, you bleed from every orifice.
Wow. Every?
Every orifice.
How many orifices do you have?
I don't have any. I've had mine removed. It's not appropriate.
You've had yours filled in.
So, yeah. Just a bit of easy fill. Wait for it to dry, sand it down, and you've just solved a you removed a potential impropriety. Sorry for being responsible for the children I encounter on the bus or passing in the street. I just don't think it's appropriate for people to have orifices. It's 2026. Grow up.
Right. Okay. We've gone into a strange place, but at least you don't need to fear this snake.
Absolutely. Well, I don't know what will happen if the snake bites me. Yeah, you're right. Nothing.
Oh, no. Nothing. Okay. Nothing happens.
There's a boomslang snake in the room. Quick, get no orifice by.
Da, 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 da.
Bumping into the wall.
It's a weird superpower he elected to have, but we gave him the choice. We said, you can have anything, Andy.
He was bitten by a radioactive Ken doll.
Oh, dear.
There you go. Yes, it thins your blood, doesn't it? Yes. Makes your blood very, very thin and it spurts out everywhere.
Yeah, I know Henry Taysom. Hello, Henry, if you're listening.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Okay, the next one goes out to Olivia. And Olivia, your fact is that Albert Einstein has a social media team.
Yeah, this is all about dead people with social media accounts. Dead celebrities where the estate is still trading, isn't it? And there are loads of them around.
Yeah.
Because there are all these weirdly active accounts, you know. Yeah. I used to know, I'm sure you have known people who've done, they've had to be the voice of a company on social media.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I used to know a bloke who did, oh God, I can't remember whether it was KFC or something similar. But he did about 17 of them. And it was just his way of, you know, making ends meet while he worked as a comedian.
But I imagine if they don't mind giving you leeway to say whatever you want, which some of them, it seems like they really don't care. Like, is it the Ryanair or EasyJet where they just basically spend the whole time trolling people?
Really?
Like, I think, like, if they give you the opportunity to do that, I reckon that's quite a good job for an upcoming comedian.
You cancel my flight and you lost all my luggage and they just say, ah, we'll do it again, you stupid bastard. Yeah.
I mean, there is a bit of that. That happens.
Oh, dear. Here's one more. This one goes out to Alice, and it's the fact that the very hungry caterpillar was originally called A Week with Willy the Worm.
Yeah, really
good. It's all about the very hungry caterpillar. And Eric Carle, who wrote it.
Yeah. Yes.
We're all fans.
Although I don't remember if it was originally a caterpillar, because the big reveal with a worm is what? It's... You don't get the big double page spread.
Are you trying to avoid the spoiler for the very hungry caterpillar?
Look, I just don't want to ruin it. Like,
no, you're right. He wouldn't go into the chrysalis or
he might get chopped in two.
It must be that. It must be, oh, magic. It's two
and then
worms.
But then he's got another friend.
Yeah.
That's nice. I think that's a nice ending.
But then he has to share all the food with them.
Isn't that a good lesson? This feels like a better lesson for kids, actually, because the very hungry caterpillar just teaches you how great it is to be beautiful. But a week with Willy the worm teaches you how good it is to have a friend to share with.
Does it teach us good to be beautiful?
That's certainly the lesson I've tried to drill into.
It basically says, as long as you keep eating nonstop for a week,
that's it.
You're going to be really, really fit.
Yeah. It's a misleading piece of literature, I think we can agree.
There is, I think people, like kids, have written into Eric Carle and said, actually, all caterpillars only live on single leaves and they never have any variation in their diet whatsoever. And also, they all go into either chrysalises or cocoons, which is the opposite of whatever Eric Carle said.
Get it right, Eric. I'm with the kids.
And on Monday, he ate a leaf, and on Tuesday, he ate two of the same kind of leaf.
No, look, I
think...
This
is what you want, children, is it? Because...
This is Chen Zed.
And at the end of the week, he felt quite sick and didn't really like the look of himself when he looked in the mirror.
But he resolved that that's fine and he's got next week to change things. And that, oh God,
he got on a Zempic prescription and everything's okay now.
Boo.
Righty-ho, last fact for the day, I think. Mm-hmm. And this is for Shannon O'Keefe. And this is a fact that in World War II, the 20 Committee was in charge of turning German spies. In Roman numerals, that made them the XX Committee, i.e. the Double Cross Committee.
Very strong.
Yeah, really good.
Did they think of the committee number after they thought of the main job of the committee? Maybe.
I think they did, yes. This was a fact by Anne Miller, who has been on the podcast many times and is a big spy fan, isn't she? In fact, has written entire novels about spies for children.
Yeah. Yes, entirely factually accurate, unlike the Very Hungry Caterpillar or the Animal Spies.
She's not mixing up her cocoons and her chrysalises
anytime
soon. All right, lovely. That is all of the facts that you've sent us, and that's all of the facts that we are giving you this week. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Little Fish. And especially thank you to our 8 new custodians, who are Jane, the fervor of a new convert, Casey Crubb, Jay Scoynes, Henry Taysom, Olivia Alice, and Shannon O'Keefe. Take good care of those facts. For the rest of you, please do come back this time next week for another Little Fish, or you can listen to A Big Fish, otherwise known as No Such Thing as a Fish, at the end of this week. If you want to become a friend of the podcast and become a fact custodian, with which you don't only get a fact, you get a special certificate sent to you into your inbox that you can print off and frame, stick on your wall forever and brag about, then go to patreon.com/clubfish. And do keep writing into podcast@qi.com. with your favourite facts. They might make it to this show. Andy loves getting the emails. He's always begging for more. Give him more. And we'll see you again soon. Thanks so much for listening. Goodbye from us.